This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
You are on Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9, but no Andrew the Apprentice.
Yeah, lucky him. No. Says poor Andrew the Apprentice, but really, he's not here. He's having a break, so...
You know him. That he's not. I mean, shame, the poor boy.
He's taking a break from this.
He's whistling his way off to Western Australia.
Lucky thing.
He's going to see the dynamic metropolises.
Say hi to
Metropoli of Karratha, Port Hedland and Broome.
Mm. Well, say hi to Auntie Gina for us.
And I love
Gina Reinhardt.
Yeah, no, I got it. Thank you. I was moving on. I love the fact that at one point he's staying in the Starfire Roadhouse or Wildfire Star Flame something Roadhouse, and its address is Great Western Highway.
Get out.
Yeah, no, that's it. Great Western Highway.
Sounds amazing. It sounds like somewhere where the Priscilla bus would drop
awesome.
Off. Sounds amazing.
Now we should introduce our two studio guests. They're sitting there looking very lovely this evening. Hello, boys. We've got Dean and Craig.
Hello.
Hello.
What am I, chopped liver?
Yeah, you are chopped liver.
No, I'm chopped liver.
For tonight's performance. Now, we've got you guys in here because you're pretty and we like to look at you. And because...
I thought that's why you would get a mirror, Avi.
Oh, he can stay. No, an article came out online this week... they kind of piqued my interest, piqued James's interest as well. 10 yeah. things that HIV positive guys want negative guys to know. And of course, the headline is kind of interesting. As a positive guy, I thought, oh, well, that could be interesting. I wonder what they have to say. And some of it is kind of interesting and some of it is kind of what the fuck. So let's start by going through this list, shall we?
Let's do it.
Number one, all positive guys are not barebacking drug addicts.
Oh, surprise.
Look, they start on a high, if you'll pardon the pun.
So, guys, are you two barebacking drug addicts?
Wow.
No.
No, and I think with this one here, it's a little bit tough. Like, it's obviously something that's happening in our community, but it's not exclusive to people who are HIV positive. He did actually mention in this that it's easy to kind of place blame and look at HIV as being some sort of behavioral problem with guys and, you know, saying, well, you're using meth, therefore you deserve what you got. But I certainly don't agree with this, with the statement, but yeah.
And I don't know. Look, when I created the material for tonight, I purposefully did not print the comments that were associated with this article.
Because never read the comments for anything, really.
No, that is valid and just, but I made the mistake of reading them and they were vile. But from gay men.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing that I found, you know, the stigma associated with gay men who party, who then make, I'm going to say, risky decisions, and then become, whether it's HIV positive, whether they get an STD, that blame, that victim shaming within our own community is very strong. Therefore, it's very easy for somebody of the morality, in inverted commas, of being negative to go, oh, well, all of you HIV boys are barebacking drug addicts.
But I do feel like this one is a little bit like there's no smoke without fire. It's not like this hasn't just like come about out of nothing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think I read some statistics that it's like if you're on meth for 1 to 2 years or something, there's a 70% chance that you have HIV.
Well, yes. Which, sure. Certainly, undertaking risky behavior and using drugs does raise the prevalence that
But I think what a lot of people don't understand is that it's not a two-way street. It's not your positive. Therefore, you were barebacking drug addict. You know, sometimes it's barebacking drug addict. Therefore, you're positive. Not always, you know, but it's not a two-way street, so it's not.
Do you have in our community here in Melbourne? If we're looking at these, this was obviously written from an American perspective. This was written for an American website by an American. Do you think this is a local concern for negative guys? Do you think there is that perception here in Melbourne or perhaps in Australia that HIV guys are barebacking drug addicts?
No, I think, well, I think it depends on your exposure to different groups of people and stuff like that. I think the mentality around Melbourne is less about the fact that positive people are barebacking drug addicts, but that positive people are just more promiscuous and slutty, and which I believe is another point.
Yeah, no, you're
yeah, maybe it is.
Yeah, no, they are. No, you're getting, that's number six. Hold your horses on that one. Horses.
I think this is not, you know, point one is not really just about barebacking drug addicts. As one person said to me recently, it's like, oh, do I really need to get an HIV test? Like, I'm not African. I'm like, come on. Are you serious? Did you just repeat what you just said in your head? Think about it. Go and get tested.
Yeah. And it's an interesting point here because, as they say, the truth is that the majority of new infections occur within primary relationships, such as a lover or boyfriend, and usually because one partner did not know they were infected and then transmitted HIV.
Yeah, that's right. And did you see that story that came out this week? It was on SBS The Feed about
a woman by her husband, which is really interesting.
She was infected by her husband and she didn't know until he got really ill. And then, you know, died a year after he found out that he was positive.
Right.
From an AIDS-related illness, which, you know, I think must have meant that he must have been positive for a very long time.
Yeah, from what I remember, that was back in
93 or something, or 96?
It was pre-96, because when the treatment changed in 1996, so it was before that.
It was in the 90s.
Didn't we also have a representative or, I forget the word, ambassador for World AIDS Day last year who was a woman who had a similar thing happen to her? Her boyfriend had made her positive and then her boyfriend left.
I think so.
In not very nice ways, I believe.
And you,
it happens. And I think that's the main point out of this is the fact that because there is stigma still around HIV, people are not going to be completely honest about wanting to get checked, and which will lead to it being passed on to people who are in these, you know, monogamous, closed, open, whatever they are, relationships. The fact that, you know, they think that they trust their partner and then realize that...
Yeah, I think a lot of it also comes from not joining the dots. I remember I had someone who was like, oh, I don't have any condoms. And I'm like, well, it's no condoms. Yeah. Like, it's condoms or just going to go home. And he's like, oh, but I just came out of, you know, a 8-year monogamous relationship. And I said, yeah, but you also just finished telling me about how for 5 of those years your partner was cheating on you with half of Melbourne. So what in any sense of this story do you think that you are fine to do this?
Hide and seek. Shut up, babe, and talk me rich.
The most diverse crowd. Joy 94.9.
You're on Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9, your show for exploring sex, sexuality, and self. My name's Avi Miller. Over there is James Finlay. Over there is Craig. And over there is Dean.
Yes, and we are talking 10 things HIV positive guys want negative guys to know. Well, this has come out on QWERTY, and
I'm pretty sure it's QWERTY.
QWERTY? Oh, QWERTY's the keyboard.
Yeah, there you go.
So we're going through them and yaying or naying them, but we've only got 3 so far. Well, we got a full hour, so whatever. If you have something to add to the list, you can get involved. 0427JOY949 or on air at joy.org.au. But second point,
number two, living with HIV is not a toxic horror show of medications.
To be honest, before I started doing my master's in sexual health, I thought it may have been like a bottle of pills a day. Actually, thought it may have been like that. And I know that one day it was like that.
Exactly. And I think we were talking before, back in 1996, when originally the heart treatment came out, you know, it was like 3 times a day, 5 pills, you know, 3 times a day. So it was, you know, really hard to keep up. But I was just thinking recently, I was at the doctor's about 2 days ago, and there's actually 4 different once a day treatment options now. So I'm actually going to be swapping to once a day from 2 a day. So things are a lot better, and the side effects are almost non-existent.
And one of the things as well with the original original antiretrovirals and HA antiretrovirals was time constraints. They had such a short half-life that you had to take them at exactly the same time every day. You didn't have a big margin of error for these things.
Mm. Like the pill.
Yeah, pretty much. The efficacy of these things were dramatically reduced if you were an hour late.
Right.
But now, you know, you've got pills that have a 36 to 40 hour half-lives, which means that you can have a 6 hour window either side of when to you take normally it, yeah. take the pill because it's still active.
When I was interviewing Lorenzinus Thomas, who's one of the plenary speakers at the AIDS 2014 conference, and she was telling me that when she was a kid, because she was born HIV positive, that it was horrendous when she was going to school. She would have to take, you know, 15 pills a day or something, like some in the morning, then some at lunch, and then some like at night. And then if she was feeling ill and like threw them up, then she would have to take them all again. And it was like the worst thing in the world. Mm. So, you know, it's no wonder that people do think that it is a toxic horror show of medication.
There are worse. Ask anybody who's gone through hepatitis C treatment.
Right.
That's a toxic horror show of medication.
Chemo.
Yeah.
It could be worse.
I'm not sure that's the right message. I just heard myself out loud.
Yeah.
Don't get us wrong. This is not
pleasant. It's just not as unpleasant as other things.
Yes.
But they are the progression in treatment has been remarkable. I know that you know they've PrEP has been approved in the United States. It's in testing here in Australia.
Truvada, isn't it?
Yeah, it's Truvada, which is a once a day pill. If you are HIV positive, you could be on Truvada, once a day pill. If you want to do PrEP, which is pre-exposure prophylaxis, you also take Truvada, essentially.
Yeah. It's really the same thing. It's just a different way of taking it.
Yeah. You're taking it as a prevention rather than as a maintenance.
Yeah.
They're now testing a once-a-month injection.
It's not once a month.
It's once every three months.
Well, no, the injection they're testing now is once a month. Oh, okay, they want to extend that to 3 months.
The three-month one was on monkeys.
Yes.
Only, that's true.
But, you know, one of the things I'm possibly jumping ahead or aside quietly.
Jump away.
Yeah. Is one of the big arguments against PrEP, which I find hilarious, is that men couldn't possibly take a pill a day because women have had this problem for years with birth control, but apparently men couldn't manage it. But they say that if you can get to a once every 3 month injection,
it would be more manageable.
It would be more manageable.
Still, I feel like if you're having trouble with a pill a day, you're probably also going to miss that 3 month injection.
You'd think, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I think it's just a person by person thing. I think some people are better at taking a pill every day than other people are.
And the argument does amuse me for the very reason that women quite happily take a birth control pill a day.
Yeah, well,
it was your phone alarm. That's what they do.
I have one. I remember mine.
That does not work for me. I have like five alarms in the morning and none of them wake me up or do anything. But PrEP's really interesting because I looked it up today. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that kind of annoys me about PrEP is that everyone keeps misquoting the statistics and saying that it's 99% effective, and it's not 99% effective. It is 99% effective when used with condoms.
Yeah.
The men who have sex with men survey that they did said that it was 44% effective, and it is 92% effective if there are traces of it in your blood, which means you're actually taking the pill every day and on your regimen quite well.
So it's only effective if you take it every day.
Yeah, that's really what the study said.
Because
people weren't taking it as much as they were supposed to.
And the thing that actually really scares me is that a lot of doctors are misquoting this statistic as well, which I feel like is giving people a false blanket of security when taking PrEP and stuff like that.
But they also are quoting risk reduction statistics, i.e. it's a 96% reduction in risk. It's not a 96%... It's not 96% effective.
Correct.
It's a 96% reduction in the risk from the baseline.
Yeah.
So you have to find out what the baseline comparison number was to find out, in fact, what your 1 in 100 or 1 in 1,000.
Which is still pretty good.
Yeah. No. Look, it's.
Well, it's better.
Effective. Yeah. Effective. Effective PrEP, i.e. you're taking it every day on time,
and you're using
regularly.
Protection.
But even without protection, it is as effective as effective condom use. But it requires both. It requires that your prep is consistent or your condom use is consistent, neither of which people see in the real life.
No, and neither of which they saw in the studies either, from memory.
Which is kind of why the partner study was really interesting.
The opposites attract.
Well, is the Australian version of that one. The partner study is the American version, where they showed no instance of HIV transmission with a virally suppressed positive person. So if a positive person is on treatment and virally suppressed, there was absolutely no incidence of transmission to the negative partner. The transmissions that did occur to the negative partners in the study were from a third party.
Mm. Oh, wow.
Yeah. And they were all genomically proven to not have come from the virally suppressed partner, which is really good news for prevention. Treatment is prevention.
Mm.
And more motivation to go out and get tested, because there's this standing irony that the safest person to have sex with is somebody who's on HIV positive and on treatment.
Exactly.
Because they're the only person who's 100% sure of their status.
Yeah, exactly. which I think brings us very nicely to our third point, is the fact that point three is that HIV infection does not automatically turn guys into dangerous liars. I think one of the points in this paragraph that comes to mind is, well, one that the three of you, I guess, would relate to, is when you tell someone about your status.
That's all. Yeah.
Yeah. I've had some really interesting experiences, some that quite annoy me, where
say a lot of them would.
Where, you know, I've had sex with someone maybe once, maybe a couple of times, and then for some reason my status has come up later and they've completely blown up at me and said, you should have told me ahead of time. And I've been left there sitting going, hang on, if you feel this strongly about having sex with a positive person, why did you not ask me? Like, why do I have to take all of the responsibility if you feel this way? Like, I didn't know that you felt this way. And if you had have told me ahead of time, we would have talked about it and I would have disclosed to you. But, you know, I can't read your mind and I don't know what your stance is on HIV. And it's just as much your responsibility to make sure that you're engaging in sexual practices that you feel safe with.
And also, you know, in those sorts of scenarios, if you are having safe for sex, there's the argument is, what difference does it make?
Mm.
Yeah.
You know, I never put you at risk.
Yeah. No, obviously, you don't do something that's risky.
So knowing that I was HIV positive, or knowing that you were HIV positive prior to this, would not have reduced your risk in any measurable way.
Yeah.
You know,
I think there's still an amazing amount of fear around HIV. So people get quite angry if you don't tell them prior to having sex with them. So I understand sort of where they're coming from, because I used to feel the same way when I was, you know, 17, 18. Mm. I was petrified of HIV. And if someone told me they were HIV positive, I would completely avoid them. So I kind of understand the flip side of that argument. So
do you think that fear comes from, I'm going to use the word ignorance, but it's probably too strong, but there is an lack of understanding plus a fear?
Absolutely. I think that people don't understand what HIV means or what their risk factors are. And I think if they were better educated, you know, they probably wouldn't care whether you told them or not. I mean, again, obviously, if you're not doing anything that's too risky. So,
I coming from my side, I'm going to say that I would prefer to know, but then I also say that I usually always ask anyway.
And I've now gotten...
Not that I don't, like, practice safely. I always practice safely, but still it's something that I would like to tick off my list of, you know, if... You know, if something happens, then I'm prepared for it.
And I've now gotten... Well, look, I've been in a relationship for 2.5 years now. Woo, go me.
2.5 years? That's not a thing.
Well, I was working out how long I've been in the relationship.
Right, okay.
But, you know, when I met my now partner, the night that we... I think one of the that wasn't the first thing that I said to him, but one of the first things that I said to him, because it was kind of obvious that we had a connection, that you know, you should know I'm HIV positive.
Mm.
And his reaction was, I don't give a shit.
Yeah. Like,
score, carry on doing what you're doing. But I've gotten to the point now where, you know, with profiles that are online, all say that I'm upfront, I'm positive online.
Yeah.
You know, because it just weeds out the trolls.
Yeah, well, it would.
You know, I don't need that kind of.
It
was like Dr. Seuss said, those who care don't matter, and those who don't care matter most.
Joy. 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 Joy.
Hide and seek.
So sexy it hurts.
Good evening. You're with James and Arvi here on Hide and Seek, and we've got special guests Craig and Dean in the studio, and we are talking things that HIV positive guys should, well, want HIV negative guys to know.
Yes.
We've ticked a few off our list. If you want to add to the list, 0427JOY949 or on air at joy.org.au. Now, where are we up to?
Well, we thought, for the interests of time management, considering we've only gotten through three of them.
We're skipping forward.
We're skipping four and five.
Yeah. Look, the author did repeat himself a couple of times, so.
Yeah, there's only so many times you can make the same point, yeah.
Yeah.
But we're going to six. HIV guys are not promiscuous. Sorry, guys with HIV are not promiscuous or have a rotten sex life or no sex life.
I've already felt really bad about this one because I am a bit promiscuous. I'm not going to lie. I'm a bit of a slut. And I've just felt like every time that someone has found out about my status and then they've just gone, oh, well, of course, because you're promiscuous. And I'm like, no, but, you know, I feel like I am definitely carrying on that stigma. Sometimes it's...
Well, I think gay men sometimes feel guilty when people say, oh, well, you know, you guys have sex all the time. And then, well, definitely a few years ago, I was like, yeah, do. Yep.
Totally. Not anymore. Do. Totally do. In wherever we are, well, there is that perception that gay men can have sex wherever, whenever.
Which is definitely possible if have no standards.
Well, I think that's more to the point of this... What the author of this particular article is trying to get at a fairly roundabout manner is that you have a dysfunctional sex life. There's nothing wrong with being promiscuous necessarily, as long as your sex life isn't dysfunctional, in the sense that
as long as you're not, you know, not going to work because you need to have sex, you know,
yeah,
in order to disturbing your life.
I know, you just do it at work.
Yeah,
you're lucky enough.
But it's also linking back to point one, that all, you know, positive guys are barebacking drug addicts. That same implication is that it's not that we have lots of sex; it's that we have lots of quote unquote bad sex.
Which is not the truth. I think we have the same amount of sex as everybody else, really.
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
I don't know. Is there a quota?
I mean, do I have what? You've gone without sex for a month and that's a long time? I'm like, yes.
Yeah. No, that's there's a counseling services for that sort of delay.
To line them up.
Yeah. But I think that's you know, the author makes a point of this is being another example of negative guys trying to distance themselves from positive guys by judging them as different, you know, whereas there are all types of positive guys and there are all types of negative guys.
Yeah, well, Dean and I were talking about this a little bit earlier, where it's like, you know, the whole if I can label something to a HIV person that is not what I have, then, you know, I must be fine.
Mm.
So, you know, it's like, oh, well, HIV people are slutty, so, you know, as long as I'm not as slutty as them, then I'll never catch HIV. Or, you know, HIV people are having bareback sex and taking drugs, so as long as I never do that, then, you know, it'll be fine. Well, I mean, if you don't have bareback sex, then that's a good one.
But the more sex you have, the higher chance you have of contracting it anyway.
Absolutely.
Yeah, which is why I don't laugh at people, but I am always a little bit cautious about people who play the risk game. It's like, well, it's less risky And I'm like, yeah, but, you know, you've taken it from, you know, two in 100 chance to 1 in 100 chance. It's like, how much sex do you have? Because if you have sex with 100 guys in a year, well, one of those times you could be positive. Yeah. That's how it works. It could be the first time. It could be the last time. It could be anywhere in between. It's still a risk game. And I don't think a lot of people who play the risk game actually understand statistics well enough to
really I don't think a lot of gay men know statistics at all.
We could start discussing the Monty Hall problem. We only have, you know, 23 minutes left.
And if you're in London, it's, you know, 1 in 10 gay guys has living with HIV. And so when I was living in London and I found out that statistic, I was like, oh, geez, I've been busy. But so there are definitely a few in there. Next point.
Which takes us to number 7. How they got it and who gave it to them is none of your business. Have you been asked?
I've never been asked how I got it. Well, actually, no, I think my mum asked me how I contracted it. And it comes back to that blame game or pointing fingers. So it's something that I sort of never sort of played into. But apart from that, no one's actually asked me that. So I've been pretty lucky, I guess.
Yeah, I've been asked. Yeah, but I mean, you know, I've just kind of likened it to, you know, also the same kind of people have been like, so I saw you leaving the party with that person. Did you hook up with them? They're just gossip queens, I think, really. Yeah. It's also still none of their business. But, you know, if I want to tell you, I'll tell you.
But, you know, I was thinking about this and I thought the closest, I was trying to think of a heterosexual equivalent, in this frame. And the closest equivalent was a pregnant girl being asked, do you know who the father is?
Yeah.
Because the implication there is that she's so slutty that she has no idea who actually got her pregnant. Likewise, when asked this by a negative guy, the implication is, again, I'm so slutty that I have no idea where I got this from because there could be so many opportunities for this to have occurred.
But it's pretty normal to ask, do you know who the father is? Like, it's pretty normal to ask that.
No, if you wouldn't ask a married couple, do you know who the father is?
Well, depends how much you like them.
you wouldn't ask them seriously. Yeah, you know, if a young heterosexual married couple and the girl is pregnant, you don't ask her, oh, is he the father? Because it's implied. He might not be.
The interesting thing about that kind of implication is that it's also hard to pinpoint sometimes because there's generally like a 3 to 6 month bracket between when you are infected to when you may know that you're infected. And, you know,
and that's assuming regular testing.
Exactly. Yeah. And if your dance card is pretty full, then you might not know, but not because you're, you know.
But I think there is an important fact, like, that is telling people how it's possible or how you've got it, to be honest. Because I think if people are aware about how other people have been infected, then they go, okay, well, if that's happened to that person, that could happen to me. And I think that's one of the important things about that. You know, because a lot of people don't know how, you know, it's contracted, to be honest. Like, they think, oh, yeah, well, you know, I'm not injecting drugs and I'm not, you know, having people come in my ass all the time. It's like, well, you know, it's not just like that. You know, you could get it from this, A, B, or C. It's like, oh, my God, I can do, I've done that before, you know?
I suppose, if you look at the educational aspect, and we're being generous, and I'll go out on that limb with you, Japs. I suspect the majority of people who are asking this question are not being as generous as you're making them out to be.
But also, the flip side of that is that as much as it's all right for, or as good it is for people to know how you can get it, not everyone is actually comfortable about talking it. And those kind of questions should really be asked to, say, you know, advocates and people who are willing to step forward and go, this is my story.
Which brings us to the next point.
Hide and Seek is your show for exploring sex, sexuality, and self on Joy 94.9.
You are on Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9. It is 18 minutes to 11 here on Thursday, the 12th of June. I'm putting, I don't know why I'm putting a date in, because I'm just going to have to edit that out for the podcast.
And that.
Never mind. You're with, I mean, you're with James. You're also with the very lovely Dean and Craig. We're talking about the things that HIV positive guys really want negative guys to know.
And if you want to get involved, you can 0427 joy949 or onair@joy.org.au. We've got one text in here that says, I see the person, not their status, and accept men for who they are. Oh, that's lovely.
Thank you.
We need more of you.
Yeah.
Anonymous texter.
Now, we're just talking about whether, oh yeah, people asking, how did you get it? Who did you get it from? Blah, blah, blah. Who's the father?
Yeah, indeed.
Who's the father to your HIV-positive baby?
Yes.
Which brings us to the next point, which I have to say I completely disagree with. That says, if you need an HIV educator, go find one.
And the implication in this text is that somebody with HIV isn't necessarily an HIV educator.
No, but they know more about the HIV than the person that's asking them.
Oh,
not always.
Not always.
No, not always. A lot of people just go to the doctor, find out that they're positive, and the doctor says, take this pill, and they take that pill.
Well, they know how they... Well, they would know a little bit about transmission, no doubt.
They know how they got it. They know.
They know, yeah.
How to protect them, yeah.
They know how to protect themselves because they have to protect themselves more than they used to.
Again...
It's if the equivalent is, oh, when did you come out? How, when did you find out you were gay? Tell me about that. Like, this is what I feel it's like. What is it like being a gay person? And I get that all the time. All the time. And so I'm constantly telling people about what it's like being a gay person, what it's, you know, and educating people about gay rights, it's just the same.
No, I've gotten to the point when somebody asked me about, you know, what it's like to be gay, I said, drop your pants, I'll show you.
Well, that's a good approach.
You know, that down in the...
Let's move directly to the practical.
That makes Christmas is very awkward, I'd imagine.
Or very fun.
But Dean, you were going to say that you disagreed with this point.
You know I do, and particularly for him, like he's obviously written this article to try and dispel some of the myths and the do's and don'ts of what you can ask a positive person. But, you know, particularly in my position, this last year I put my status on Facebook. Mm. And the reason that I did that was to challenge the ideas of what someone might think a HIV positive person looks like or, you know, what a HIV positive person can be. So I think it's our responsibility as the community to educate the wider community, because we keep talking about the stigma that's attached to HIV, and that's not going to change unless we stand up and be counted and educate the wider community. So I don't agree with this one at all.
And the thing is, when it comes from someone, from a normal person, not an advocate, not someone who's on the radio all the time, it makes it more personal, you know? Yeah. So why should it be my job to advocate to people all the time?
But I think it puts an undue amount of pressure on the HIV positive person.
I don't think everyone should have to do it, and I've been positive for almost 10 years now, but like I said, things aren't going to change if we don't
talk about it.
Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying don't talk about it, but I don't...
There's a balance.
Yeah, no, I'm saying there needs to be a balance between being open about your HIV positive status and being willing to answer questions versus sitting somebody down in a classroom saying, right, let's go through HIV 101.
Well, no, it's not like that at all, I don't think.
And I don't think it's necessarily bad for someone who's positive to go, look, to be honest, I don't think I have all the facts that you will need to understand this. I think you should go talk to your doctor, or here are some pamphlets, or here is a phone number, just give them a call. Like, I think there's a difference between, you know, someone going, nope, not talking about this. This isn't happening. It's something that's me and me only, and I'm not going to talk to you about it, as opposed to, look, I don't think I'm the best person for this. Here is some other information or somewhere to go.
And I've recently had the experience. How many of you guys were at Midsummer where they did the swab test?
Yeah, no, I had that.
I only turned up for that.
Oh, I know. It was quite fun.
And you got your results SMS'd back to you, and it was like, you've tested positive for HIV.
They only
SMS'd that result back to people that had marked that they were HIV positive. Okay. We had an interview with the researchers.
No, I got an SMS
for negative.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. But if you were positive and you'd put down on your form that you thought you were negative, you got a whole different response.
Oh, right. Okay.
The only people who got the SMSs were people who were the status that they
probably
said they were.
Probably would have got a phone call.
Yeah.
But doesn't that automatically, like, if you get a SMS, if you're negative or positive, and you know you're positive, and then you get a phone call, it's like, oh.
Well,
automatically know
yeah, you don't know what the number is.
Yeah.
It's not gonna
There's never going to be an easy way. Here's a cake and oh, by the way. Yeah. But what happened during that process is a friend of mine found out that he was positive.
Through the swab testing?
Through the swab testing.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. And he was one of like 100 guys that they found during that test
That's
process.
Crazy.
That didn't know.
That didn't know.
On that one day.
How many tests did they do?
Quite a lot. That was across the entire testing. They did thousands.
Oh, right. You know, no, just not just over midsummer.
Not just over midsummer.
Okay, no, I was going to say.
There was a bunch. And I find myself far more willing to be an HIV educator to newly diagnosed guys than I am to negative guys. Like I
because I guess maybe they're more willing to hear it.
That, and I think there's a shared experience. I remember what it was like to be newly diagnosed.
You're like Uncle Arvi.
Oh, God.
For me, it's all about their mindset. Like, you know, you can tell when someone is asking you questions out of panic as opposed to out of, I feel like I should try to understand this. And when people get a bit panicked, I kind of go, look, I don't think that this is going to be constructive in any way. And I think that you need to come down and maybe talk to someone who has, you know, experience dealing with people in your situation. So, you know, I think it's appropriate to go, I'm not right to tell you this.
No, we're not saying that you should be all counselors.
Yeah.
God, no.
I think there's only so much information that you can get from your doctor and, you know, finding other people that are HIV positive to be able to share experience and get information is vital.
And I wonder if there isn't, if that doesn't lead to more scope. The one thing that I wish that South African high schools had that American high schools seem to have in greater numbers, because I keep seeing on the news, is gay straight alliances.
Yeah.
And I wonder if there isn't a call for a POSNEG alliance.
Not in high schools.
Not in high schools, no. But that idea that there is, you know, there are plenty of social groups for HIV positive guys. Yep. You know, they're ones for newly diagnosed guys. They're ones for, you know, long-term diagnosed guys. They're ones for gay guys who've been diagnosed. They're ones for straight people who've been diagnosed. And there's plenty of...
I'm a POS ally.
Well, that's exactly right. I don't know how much marketing... I mean, they're probably out there, sort of social groups for POS guys or POS people and their allies to, you know, interact and share, and for neg guys to learn and grow in a non-judgmental kind of...
Not to be a wet blanket.
Yes.
My experience has been that there is a club, and quite often when I've spoken to quite a few
people who
are negative, who are allies, and the positive people are like, you don't know what you're talking about. You haven't gone through it. And that's not the right way to approach it.
No, but you find that with the gay community as well. Like people say that about straight people. Oh, get out of here. You're not gay. You don't belong.
But any minority does that. Like
exactly.
Women do it as well, and all that stuff.
So it's not surprising. It's disappointing because, you know, people should know better these days.
Yeah.
Indeed. And on that note, I think it's time to say thank you to our lovely boys.
Oh, yeah. Wait, before we go, though.
Yes.
Was there anything on the list that you wanted to add?
Yes. Be compassionate, because positive people are people too. And I think you just need to be mindful of the fact that they also have feelings, and they may not always react nicely to the way that you would like to approach an issue or something like that.
That's sad that you have to add that to the list. But that's a very important point.
Yeah.
Dean, I can see you looking at the list. You had a lot of notes.
I did have a lot of notes. It's a tricky one. I think the gay community still doesn't understand how far we've come since, you know, 1996 or 1984, and just having that knowledge and not being so afraid of it is certainly something that needs to be tackled as well. So, yeah.
Well, thank you both for coming in so much.
Thank you for inviting us.
Thank you for having us.
And yes, if anyone was listening and learnt something, then that's good. We've done our work. We've done our advocacy job for the day.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.